Imagine for a second just holding a piece of machined titanium that is, well, it's barely thicker than a standard USB port.
Right.
There are no physical buttons on it at all. The surface just feels like a solid, unbroken slab of metal in your hand.
Totally seamless.
Exactly. Yet inside that impossibly thin enclosure, there is enough processing power to render an entire living, breathing universe in real time and, you know, do it without burning your hand.
Which is wild when you really think about it.
It is, because for the last 20 years, hardware limitations have essentially been the cage that kept the wildest creative dreams locked up. I mean, the silicon basically dictated what the artist was allowed to build. But looking at the news from this past weekend, that cage just vanished.
Yeah, we're absolutely looking at a singular moment where breakthrough hardware engineering is finally stepping out of the way. It's liberating creative vision. The data we're seeing, it indicates that the traditional engineering paradigm has completely inverted.
How do you mean?
Well, the technology is finally becoming invisible enough and powerful enough that the only limit left on the table is human imagination.
I love that. And if you are joining us this morning, our mission for the next 15 minutes or so is highly specific. We are distilling a massive, transformative weekend of tech and gaming news into a sharp, authoritative Sunday morning briefing just for you.
And there's a lot to cover.
Oh, absolutely. We are pulling all this intelligence directly from a comprehensive September 6, 2026 briefing by Ticking Game. And for those who don't know, they operate as the absolute gold standard for real-time market telemetry and forensic industry analysis.
They really are the best in the business.
Yeah, and the through line connecting all their intel today is just wild. Think about the dots we have to connect for you. How do custom neural chips in a brand new Nintendo console, a completely buttonless titanium iPhone, and a legendary game director demanding to resurrect a canceled dragon-riding epic in Pacra, how do all of those share the exact same engineering DNA? Okay, let's unpack this.
There is really no better place to start tracking this shift than Kyoto, Japan. I mean, Nintendo is currently executing an unprecedented corporate mobilization.
Yeah, which is not like them at all.
Not at all. Historically, Nintendo is deeply conservative with their marketing.
Mm.
They usually space major announcements out by months, you know, just to let them breathe.
Right.
But they have just scheduled a synchronized back-to-back doubleheader Nintendo Direct for September 8 and September 9. To launch a double strike like this on a Tuesday and Wednesday, it's a total departure from their standard playbook.
It's aggressive. Yeah. And the briefing breaks down the separation of those 2 days. And it is just a brilliant piece of narrative control because September 8 is entirely dedicated to the 40th anniversary of The Legend of Zelda.
Yeah, that's a nostalgia play.
Huge nostalgia play. They are dropping upwards of 14 major franchise announcements in a single day. We're looking at definitive 4K remasters of Wind Waker HD and Twilight Princess HD, completely re-engineered for modern displays.
Oh, wow.
And on top of that, they are debuting the first cinematic teaser for the live-action Zelda film, directed by Wes Ball.
What's fascinating here is the underlying psychological strategy from Nintendo president Shintaro Furukawa.
Right, the isolation of it.
Exactly. By intentionally isolating the nostalgia of the Zelda franchise on Tuesday and just walling it off completely from the future of the hardware on Wednesday, Nintendo is effectively preempting all competitive narratives from Sony or Microsoft.
They're just hogging the microphone.
They are deliberately saturating the global media cycle. It allows them to dominate retail conversations heading into the critical holiday corridor.
Mm.
They're basically making a two-part statement.
Mm-hmm.
Tuesday says, you know, here is our unparalleled 40-year emotional legacy. And
yeah.
Wednesday says, and here is the state-of-the-art silicon that will carry us through the next decade.
And that Wednesday showcase is where the Switch 2 launch portfolio finally gets pulled into the light. The briefing notes they are laying out a new mainline 3D Mario comprehensive gameplay for Metroid Prime 4, Beyond, and crucially, major Western publisher parody.
Which has always been their Achilles heel.
Right. But they are planting a flag to prove this handheld hybrid can finally stand shoulder to shoulder with home consoles. But, you know, marketing promises are cheap.
Always.
What actually caught my attention in the briefing was the hardware telemetry backing up that confidence. Digital Foundry managed to run a forensic examination of From Software's Elden Ring, and they ran it on Final Switch 2 production dev kits.
Oh, that specific benchmark is going to be the inflection point for the entire mobile gaming industry.
It's massive.
Because Elden Ring is a notoriously demanding open-world architecture. I mean, it heavily stresses CPUs with complex enemy pathfinding, and it stresses GPUs with dense particle effects.
And the specs they recorded, I mean, they shouldn't physically be possible. We're talking about a rock-solid locked 60 frames per second at native 1080p in handheld mode.
Yeah.
And then it scales to dynamic 4K when docked to a television. But the detail that just stops me in my tracks is doing all of this while consuming less than 15 watts of total package power.
It's incredible.
If you've ever felt a gaming laptop burn your thighs while its fans sound like a literal jet engine taking off just to run a game at 60 watts, you know exactly why this 15-watt limit is the holy grail. But I have to push back on the physics of this with you.
Okay, let's hear it.
Achieving PlayStation 5-level performance profiles at under 15 watts, it feels like trying to fit a Formula One engine into a go-kart without melting the plastic chassis, right?
It really does sound like that.
We have seen other handheld PCs try to brute force modern games, and they universally suffer from aggressive thermal throttling, screaming fans, and, you know, batteries that die in 45 minutes. So how did Nintendo and Nvidia bypass the laws of thermodynamics that ruin every other handheld?
Well, they didn't bypass thermodynamics. They completely changed the approach to processing the data.
Okay.
It all comes down to the philosophy of bespoke co-design, rather than just relying on brute force commodity hardware. The Switch 2 utilizes a highly customized NVIDIA Tegra system on chip.
The Tegra, right.
Yeah. Instead of just throwing a massive power-hungry processor at the game, this chip pairs 8 high-efficiency ARM Cortex cores with an Ampere/Ada hybrid graphics processor.
So it's a customized brain? But yeah. That alone doesn't really explain the lack of heat, does it?
No, you're right. The secret actually lies in the memory architecture and the dedicated neural hardware. They backed that hybrid processor up with 12 gigabytes of high-speed LPDDR5X unified system memory. And that delivers over 102 gigabytes per second of bandwidth.
Okay, let's translate that 102 gigabytes per second into actual gameplay for the listener.
Sure.
Because if you and I are playing Elden Ring and we are traversing through the dense, fog-drenched landscape of Limgrave, or maybe we get into a massive particle-heavy sorcery battle in the royal capital of Lindell, what is that memory bandwidth actually doing in that moment to keep the console cool?
Think of memory bandwidth like a massive multi-lane highway. In older architectures, the graphical data and the processing data had to travel on separate, very narrow roads. Hmm. So when you hit a complex area like Lindell, those roads experience a massive traffic jam.
Everything bottlenecks.
Exactly. The processor has to work twice as hard to route the data, which generates immense heat. Then the fan spins up to compensate, and boom, your battery drains. But with a unified 102 gigabyte per second highway, the data never stops moving. There is zero bottleneck.
Wait, so the neural hardware you mentioned earlier, if the highway handles the traffic, what does the AI actually do? Because I'm imagining the graphics card still has to meticulously paint every single leaf on the Erd tree and every single spark of magic natively, which takes massive power.
Ah, but that is where the dedicated tensor cores and console-optimized deep learning supersampling DLSS come into play.
Oh, DLSS.
Yeah, the Switch 2 is not rendering every leaf natively. It is offloading that intensive geometry reconstruction to the AI.
So instead of the graphics card just sweating to paint every pixel in real time, the AI essentially acts like a sketch artist who already knows what the picture is supposed to look like.
Right.
And then it just fills in the blanks from memory. It's guessing the high-resolution details to save the main processor from doing all that heavy lifting.
That is the perfect analogy. It is neural upscaling. The AI handles the heavy lifting at a tiny fraction of the energy cost of native rendering.
That's brilliant.
And because the tensor cores are doing this so efficiently, Digital Foundry measured flawless 1% low frame time metrics of 16.6 milliseconds.
Wow.
Yeah, that means every single frame is delivered with perfect pacing, no micro stutters, complete thermal stability, and totally silent acoustics.
It is phenomenal engineering, and I think it illustrates a massive philosophical shift in tech right now. We are moving away from just throwing more raw brute force electrical power at a problem and moving toward designing highly specific purpose-built silicon that just works smarter.
It is so fascinating that you frame it as a philosophical shift, because that exact battle against thermodynamics and the pivot toward bespoke custom silicon is driving the biggest executive shakeup in Silicon Valley this very week.
Oh, absolutely. We are seeing the exact same mechanics play out across the Pacific in Cupertino. Because September 9 isn't just Nintendo's big day, is it?
No, it's a crowded Tuesday.
Very crowded. It is also the date of Apple's highly anticipated keynote at the Steve Jobs Theater. But looking at the Ticking Game briefing, this is far from a standard incremental phone launch.
Not at all.
This event marks the formal end of Tim Cook's 15-year reign and the official public debut of John Ternus as chief executive officer.
Yeah, and to really grasp the magnitude of this transition for the global technology ecosystem, you have to examine their opposing backgrounds. Tim Cook was the quintessential master of global logistics. I mean, his era was defined by supply chain mastery and services monetization. Under Cook, product design was heavily influenced by margin thresholds, basically standardizing parts across multiple product lines to maximize manufacturing efficiency.
So Cook's primary question was always, how efficiently can we build it at scale?
Exactly. But John Ternus operates on a completely inverted philosophy. He is an engineer's engineer.
He's getting into the weeds.
Deep into the weeds. His background is deeply rooted in mechanical specialization. He originally designed the complex structural frames for the iPad, and he was the mastermind behind Apple's historic divorce from Intel in favor of their own Apple Silicon.
Which was a massive shift.
Massive. Under Ternus, the supply chain no longer dictates the device. Thermodynamics, highly specialized silicon architecture, and custom material sciences dictate the form factor right from the moment of inception.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. We are seeing the immediate physical result of that Ternus philosophy in the iPhone 18 Pro. It is being powered by the Apple A20 Pro system on chip, which serves as the world's first commercial implementation of TSMC's 2-nanometer N2P process.
The density achieved on that node is just staggering. They are packing upwards of 280 million transistors into a single square millimeter of silicon.
Just to ground that for a second for you listening, when we talk about a 2-nanometer process, we are essentially talking about shrinking the microscopic city blocks on the chip.
Yes.
Because the data has a shorter physical distance to travel between those transistors, it takes far less electrical energy to get there. Less energy used means less heat generated. That is exactly how they can pack desktop-class rendering power into a space the size of a grain of sand without it just catching fire in your pocket.
And that thermal efficiency is the foundation that allows Ternus to execute the most controversial design shift of this generation.
The buttons.
He is realizing a long-standing engineering ambition by completely eradicating mechanical perimeter buttons from the device.
They are entirely gone. The physical volume and power buttons have been replaced by solid-state capacitive pressure zones, and they're backed by localized third-generation haptic engine actuators.
Yeah.
So instead of a physical piece of plastic or metal physically depressing, the titanium frame itself senses the microscopic pressure of your finger. Then a highly targeted vibration tricks your brain into feeling a click that didn't actually happen.
It's wild. And this specific mechanism allows them to construct an uninterrupted, hermetically sealed titanium monocoque structure. By removing the physical ingress points where buttons used to be, the briefing notes the device is now waterproof to a depth of 10 meters.
But I have to ask you, and really anyone listening who has an inherent psychological attachment to tactile feedback.
Go for it.
Are we sacrificing the satisfying mechanical click of a real button just so our phone can survive a recreational scuba diving trip? I mean, stripping away tactile reality for a solid block of metal feels like engineering for the sake of engineering. It feels kind of disconnected from how humans actually want to interact with their tools.
Well, that pushback gets to the very heart of the debate surrounding Ternus's approach. But the lack of mechanical buttons isn't actually about waterproofing. You know, the hermetic seal is just a baseline byproduct.
Okay, then what's it really about?
The answer lies in what this structural mastery enables them to do next. The ultimate flex of Ternus's engineering authority is the heavily rumored one more thing closing this keynote, the iPhone Ultra Foldable.
The white whale of the tech industry. I feel like rumors about an Apple Foldable have been circulating for almost a decade.
Oh, absolutely. And it relies on this exact mastery of material science. By utilizing an aerospace-grade titanium liquid metal hinge, the leaks suggest they have achieved an unfolded chassis profile of just 4.8 millimeters.
That is absurd. 4.8 millimeters is barely thicker than the physical opening of a USB-C port.
Yeah, and they can only achieve that thinness because they aren't relying on traditional structural compromises. The biggest failure point of every competing foldable on the market has been the physical display crease.
Right, because traditional foldables use brittle layers of glass and plastic that eventually fatigue.
Exactly. Much like bending a paperclip back and forth until the metal finally snaps. but Turnus's team bypassed that entirely by employing an adaptive, self-healing polymer glass display.
Wait, self-healing?
Yeah.
So instead of a rigid material that weakens every time you close the phone, this adaptive polymer essentially acts more like human skin. When it stretches or folds, it dynamically rearranges its molecular bonds on the fly so that a permanent crease physically cannot form.
That is the exact mechanism. So to answer your earlier critique, losing the mechanical button on the Pro model isn't just about surviving a drop in the pool. It's about Apple fundamentally rethinking the structural integrity of mobile devices from the molecular level up.
Wow, okay.
They had to master the solid-state titanium frame first so that impossible forms like a 4.8-millimeter creaseless foldable could become a physical reality.
When you look at both of these massive platform shifts side by side, a very clear picture emerges for anyone tracking the industry this weekend. The historical hardware bottlenecks that have plagued developers for decades are just vanishing.
They really are.
Custom Tegra neural chips are completely solving thermal limits in handheld gaming, and 2-nanometer engines wrapped in self-healing polymers are rewriting mobile computing. Which brings us to the ultimate question for the software side of the equation.
The creative side.
Right. When creators in the entertainment industry finally have access to limitless, frictionless processing power, what do they actually do with it?
They immediately demand to resurrect their impossible dreams.
There is no better example of this than the electrifying news coming out of the Japanese development community right now. Hideki Kamiya, the legendary auteur-director behind massive critical hits like Bayonetta, Okami, and Devil May Cry, he gave a highly publicized, extensive interview in Tokyo this weekend. And he did not mince words.
He never does.
He stated that he is 100% serious about demanding that Microsoft resurrect Scalebound.
And for context on why this matters so much to the gaming community, Scalebound was unveiled way back at E3 2014. It was positioned as an incredibly ambitious Xbox exclusive. It promised high-speed aerial character combat seamlessly combined with a massive autonomous companion dragon, all running in synchronous four-player co-op.
And that 2017 cancellation left a massive unresolved scar on the player base. The ambition was just off the charts, but the project went completely dark. But now, Kamiya is directly, publicly calling out Asha Sharma, the newly appointed executive overseeing Xbox platform strategy, stating that the ball is in her court to bring it back.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, Kamiya's reasoning is completely validated by the hardware revolutions we just discussed with Apple and Nintendo. In this new interview, Kamiya candidly admitted that back in 2017, the hardware constraints of the eighth console generation were basically a concrete wall. The early multi-threaded game engines simply could not execute his vision.
Because an autonomous companion dragon isn't just a background animation, it's a massive physics object.
Precisely. The Xbox One's processor could not handle the complex pathfinding artificial intelligence of a giant dragon, calculate its dynamic aggro against enemies, render a massive open world, and manage the network code of four players flying around simultaneously.
It's too much.
The CPU would choke. The hardware was a bottleneck that literally suffocated the creative vision. But today, Kamiya's exact quote from the weekend is, "The silicon has finally caught up with the dream."
The silicon has caught up with the dream. That is a profound way to phrase it. With 9th and 10th generation hardware, unified memory architectures like we saw on the Switch 2, and modern real-time streaming engines, those technical hurdles are obliterated.
Exactly.
The Dragon's AI doesn't break the processor anymore because the neural chips can handle the calculations instantaneously. And, you know, we are seeing this exact same reclamation of creative autonomy over in the Western market, too.
Yes, the Double Fine news.
Exactly. Tim Schafer, the legendary founder of Double Fine Productions, the auteur studio behind games like Psychonauts 2, he just gave a major retrospective on their very amicable split from Microsoft. Double Fine has officially returned to 100% independent ownership.
And Schafer's perspective on regaining their independence is vital to understanding where the industry is heading next. He referred to recovering their intellectual property sovereignty as a glorious creative awakening.
I love that quote. It's great. He explicitly dismissed the current corporate anxieties about macroeconomic climates and algorithm-driven development. His stated goal for the studio, in his own words, is to touch human souls, not optimize quarterly shareholder spreadsheets.
That dynamic feels exactly like the shift we saw in the film industry in the 1970s. You had these iconic, eccentric directors fighting tooth and nail to buy back their final cut rights from the massive studio system so they could just make art on their own terms.
Yeah, that's a spot-on analogy.
We are entering a new auteur renaissance, Look at the digital landscape we are surrounded by today. It is dominated by algorithmic metric tracking, hyper-optimized live service models, and frankly, sterile AI-generated assets designed by committee.
Right.
In that specific environment, true human eccentricity, those weird, uncompromised, distinctly human creative choices that a boardroom would normally veto, they are suddenly becoming the ultimate premium feature. It is a massive ideological realignment. For years, the industry was defined by aggressive corporate consolidation. Giant conglomerates bought up independent studios, which inevitably led to bureaucratic inertia, mass layoffs, and creative homogenization.
Yeah.
But now, armed with technology that removes all friction from the development process, creators are finally reclaiming their artistic authority. They are demanding partnerships that respect their autonomy, or they're just walking away to build it themselves.
Which brings this entire Sunday morning briefing into perfect focus. So let's pull all these threads together.
Let's do it.
From Nintendo's incredibly confident doubleheader strategy, isolating Zelda's legacy from the Switch 2's hardware, to Apple pushing mobile engineering to its absolute physical limits in the Turnus era, to visionaries like Kamiya and Schaefer reclaiming their artistic joy. This weekend marks a massive restoration of human authenticity. And paradoxically, it is all being enabled by transformative tech that is finally smart enough to get out of the way.
This raises an important question, and it's one I think will deeply impact the culture over the next decade.
What's that?
If custom silicon, neural networks, and bespoke engineering can render digital worlds that are visually and mechanically flawless worlds that are virtually indistinguishable from reality, will our next great cultural shift be a massive backlash toward the physical and the analog?
Oh, that's interesting.
If digital perfection becomes standard and effortless, will people actually start craving experiences that are deliberately flawed, difficult, and constrained by the real world?
That is an incredible thought to sit with. When the digital world can simulate anything flawlessly without breaking a sweat, maybe the only thing that holds value is the physical friction of reality. Listen, if you want to stay continuously ahead of the frontier on all these platform shifts, you need to visit TeakingGame.com for their real-time forensic market intelligence. They are the ones tracking this shift at the absolute source. Have an energetic and triumphant week ahead, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.